Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. This is the Rose, Rose Colombo, right here for you every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. And today we have a wonderful show for you. You will not want to miss it. If you are a cranky person, or maybe you don't think you're cranky, or maybe you're living with someone who is cranky, or working with someone who is cranky, someone in your family, or someone you just meet as a stranger, this is the show for you. Today is a very special day. It's a beautiful day here on the West Coast. It's September 29th, and it's 12:02 p.m. right here on the West Coast, so grab a sandwich, grab a snack, and grab a shake or whatever, smoothie, whatever you prefer, a cup of coffee, and sit back and relax. How many cranky people do you really know? Do you ever think about it? Do you ever think about yourself as being cranky? Well, we do have a very special guest today, and you will find out what he thinks about whether or not he believes he's cranky or someone he lives with is cranky, or just the general public. Today's dynamic guest is Stephen Joseph. And Stephen Joseph is a first-generation American son of a Holocaust survivor. He is an attorney, a negotiator, a speaker, an author, and he's a fully cured overweight person. And that's a huge problem in America today, and that can make you cranky. Five-time Boston Marathon and 16-time New York City Marathon runner, a humorist who has spent 28 years as a partner with therapists, a lifetime of shuckling at countless synagogues, and many years sitting on a cushion. Hold on a second. Sorry, got a phone call here. Many years sitting on a cushion staring at a white wall at the village window, but is a person who's still smart enough to know that he hasn't figured everything out except for crankiness. And he is the author of the Mom's Choice Award winning The Last Surviving Dinosaur, the Tyrannocrankatosaurus, as well as the Crankatosaurus Method, a grown-up guide to effective crankiness. And the name of his book, by the way, is A Grown-Up Guide to Effective Crankiness, the Crankatosaurus Method. Again, that's Stephen Joseph, and we're going to join Stephen in just a moment. So don't touch that dial. We'll be back when we enter into the world of authors and experts.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat, or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Colombo Chronicles Live. We are about to enter into the world of authors and experts with Stephen Joseph. And I just told you a little bit about Stephen, if you missed it. He is a generational American son of a Holocaust survivor, attorney, negotiator, speaker, author, fully cured, overweight person, five-time Boston Marathon time, and 16-time New York City Marathon runner, and a humorist. And in fact, his latest book, A Grown-Up Guide to Effective Crankiness, The Crankatosaurus Method by Stephen, and that's with the V's, E-B-E-N, Joseph, it does contain humor. So if you feel like you're a cranky person and you need to improve, or your family members, or your coworkers, your boss, you need to learn how to negotiate with them, right? Because that's how we keep peace at home, in business, and in the public sector. And that's how we deal with our employees if we know how to deal with people who are cranky or improve ourselves. So why don't we just get started and let's say hello to Stephen Joseph. Hi, Stephen. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Rose. How are you doing?
Well, I'm really happy because we have a beautiful day today. There's a little breeze, and it's always good to see the sunshine, right?
Yeah. Well, it's the same here on the East
that
Coast.
That makes us happy.
Perfect day, yes.
Yes, and I think the weather has a lot to do with crankiness as well. So, Stephen, why don't you start off with telling us why did you decide to write a book about effective crankiness, which most people don't really think about, and why do you think it's well, I'm going to ask you this question. Is there a cure for crankiness, or should you just embrace crankiness?
Well, I would say it's kind of both. I think it works together. So to answer the first question, I wrote this story, The Last Surviving Dinosaur, the Tyrannocrankosaurus. Now, the word saurus is the Yiddish word for problems, so that's why the crankosaurus into a saurus. And in my home, it was always like a competition. You think you have saurus. If I had your saurus, I'd be doing cartwheels. No one could outdo my saurus. And in that story, what happens is that the smallest dinosaur on the planet, the Tyrannocrankosaurus, kept cranking out her saurus till all the other dinosaurs vanished, except for the Tyrannocrankosaurus. And millions of years later, human beings evolved from these two little dinosaurs. That's how the story ends. And that's why we're all cranky, because we all evolved from these two little dinosaurs. So what happened, I have my website, and I started I didn't start the blog yet, but one reviewer wrote that I didn't talk enough about overcoming crankiness. And I thought, no, it's about embracing our crankiness. That's who we are. I talk in my book, you talk about the common cold where you have like two or three a year, maybe, and that's the common cold. But a common crankosaurus, you can have three or four in the morning. Your train's late, your kids have to get to school, like something is burning on the oven. All these things happen, it's just the morning, and you're cranky. So what happened, just even going back how that dinosaur story started, I was in Rome with my wife, and we rented out this Airbnb. It was summer. We're jet lagged. We're tired. We check into our apartment, and she's like dying, and we're tired, and we're trying to get the air conditioning going, and she's dying her hair, and some black dye, the power goes out. The black dye goes into her eye, And she was getting a little cranky. Of course, you know, you're tired, depleted, and black dye in your eye. You're going blind at the same time. So she was kind of cranky and unconsolable. And finally, I said, you're like the Tyrannocrankosaurus, and that's probably how all the other dinosaurs vanished. I got that story. But what happened is that afterwards, we also gave it a name. Like giving our crankiness a name, a crankosaurus. I have this crankosaurus in me. And when you give it a name and you know it, it's, you feel it, it's coming, then I could do things with it. You know, it's like, I feel a crankosaurus in me. Maybe I'll go into the other room, or just to warn you, you know. So one of the things I talk about, if let's say you came into my house, or I came into your house, you go, Steve, take off your shoes. I just bought this carpet at Walmart for $30. I don't want to get dirt on the new rug. And you take off your shoes because you don't want to put the dirt on this valuable $30 rug. But we pour out our crankiness on each other. So it's a thought about being more mindful. And again, giving it a name helps, that, and having fun with it. That it doesn't, you can still be cranky, but you're being more mindful, and in other words, effectively cranky. You don't try to cut it out. You say it's there, and you figure out how best to deal with it.
Exactly. So, okay, so now that you're more like embracing it to overcome it, so how can people actually acknowledge and articulate what is bothering them to the other person, and how do you get the other person to listen?
Well, the you know, one of the nice things about it is that we all get to use it. You know, so if I have a crankosaurus, I could say I have it, and when it's time, when I could hear you, when I could hear, you know, or you could hear me, you know, we know when it's a good time to hear each other, and we give each other space. I need space now, and maybe like a little bit later, I could like act it out. I could like wave my arms and hands, and or you have a moment when I could hear you, because one of the things happens with a lot of people, it's like, I came home from work, I'm tired, and I just want to pour out my stuff, or I don't want to talk to anybody. You come home, and you're also tired and cranky and just like, oh, man. So figuring out how to maneuver through that, and we're not putting it on each other, but we could hear each other, and we figure out ways to, when we could do that. And then there's other things, like I have a chapter in the book, Crankosaurus Kryptonite, where we all have our kryptonite. You know, it's just, and I make a joke where, like Superman, you know, the episode of the week before, one of the bad guys had kryptonite, and Superman almost like died, and Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen had to come in and save Superman. And it's funny, the next week, he never goes to the doctor and say, doctor, I have this kryptonite problem. Can you give me something or do something for me? And then Jimmy Olsen and Lois Lane doesn't say, you know what? I'm tired of this Superman and his stupid kryptonite. Let's find Batman or some other superhero. Let's dump this guy. It's like we know each other's kryptonite, and it's also having empathy. It's learning how to have empathy for the other person. It's not like I get cranky, I have my kryptonite, I have my buttons, you have your buttons, and we still love each other. We still care about each other. We learn to embrace it, and when you empower the other person and you get empowered yourself, it becomes a lot easier to manage. Again, you're not getting rid of the crankiness. You get to be cranky and actually be heard. And feel understood.
That's really important. Yeah, that's really important to be heard, because listening is a huge problem in our country. We all need to practice listening to the other person. And so So do you think that it's all these pent-up emotions inside of people that cause them to react in a bad way, file for a divorce, burn down buildings and businesses, or, you know, use their crankiness that in which are they pent up emotions and then sometimes they just explode because they haven't read books like Effective Crankiness that can help them deal with it?
Definitely. I talk about people wanting to blow off some steam. And, you think of that tea kettle, and sometimes that tea kettle blowing off steam, tea kettle just explodes, makes that loud noise. And it really is something when you don't feel understood, you don't feel heard, you're told I talk about how it's not enough just to even say how you feel. Like you talk about like little children and you say, little Timmy, don't hit Bobby, just say what you feel. Like, I feel angry. And the problem with that is that, oh boy, isn't he great at saying how he feels? But after a while, if I keep telling everybody I feel angry all the time, I start believing I'm an angry person, and then you think, oh, that's Steve. He tells me about his feelings all the time, but he seems to be a really angry kind of guy. So I try to soften it. It's like, okay, we have the common crank at Storrs. It's not about you being a certain way necessarily. It's about how we all are. Like it's this collective feeling. It's the way we all are. And again, just having empathy. And then I don't feel like I'm a happy, nice, sweet kid that just happens to have a crank at Storrs in me. I'm not angry guy. I'm not a mean guy. I'm not this terrible guy. I'm just a nice guy with a little crankiness, whatever you want to call it. And then it doesn't feel like this weight on you. You know, it's just that's part of it. So, yes, when people, even if they get to say that they're angry all the time, and that's it, nothing happens. Okay, you're angry, you say what you're feeling, and you don't feel like you're heard, it doesn't do anything, it doesn't go anywhere. Even that could turn out into like an explosion.
Well, I think also from reading your book and what you're saying is that when you, this is my opinion from what I got from the book too, was that when you're cranky and you keep practicing it to control your pitted up emotions, that also you don't keep complaining as much and you don't react cranky as much if you continue to practice your basic principles in your book that you include, and create space for both you and your family's crankiness. So what do you mean that they should create space? Because in one of your stories you talk about a trip where people are all in the same vehicle that are going to go on a happy vacation, and yet inside the car all this crankiness is happening.
Yeah, no, it's just so like, well, I talk about two different things in that. There's two different chapters kind of allude to like being stuck in a car, and one is crank at Storrs pandemic. Like we're all stuck in the house, and it's almost like, you know, like when are we going to get there? And of course, nobody, like this was written right at the beginning of the pandemic, and no one knows when we're going to get out. We still don't know exactly. And then there's crank at Storrs in paradise, where we're taking the same vacation, one parent is the planner and one makes all the the travel arrangements and like hotels and the sightseeing trips and all that, and flights. And then the other parent does the packing list. And then, of course, you know, what happens is that you end up having the same arguments and fights in the middle of that vacation. So even like impromptu acting or just like talking about having this fun kind of event beforehand about all the stuff that always happens at every single vacation, and we let it all out beforehand. Like, why did you blah, blah, blah organize so many different trips, like the events for us, the six things in one day? We can't do that. You know, whatever it is, but have fun with it. And again, even laugh at ourselves, you know. So the book is a very funny book, and it's about laughing at ourselves. And
it is a funny book, but it's a funny book, but it also has serious information that can actually is a self-help book to help people deal with these issues, because they can lead to serious problems if we don't learn to control our own pent-up emotions and crankiness that affects other people and children and workers, co-workers, and especially people that work in, like, public service. They come across cranky people, and waitresses, for example. I mean, they take a lot of brunt from people who are cranky, right? And so,
that's right, yeah.
And so you have a story in there about you were obese, which is a huge problem in America, and because of all the fast food, preservatives, chemicals, junk foods. And it's not like in the past where our parents and grandparents had all this wonderful home-cooked food that was healthy for you, and a lot of the things they grew out in the backyard. So how did these steps affect your life, and how did you overcome being overweight and then maintain it without getting cranky? Because a lot of people who have to give up their regular fast foods and things they enjoy eating do get cranky.
So that story, I had hit about 240 pounds by December of 1987. And by June of 1988, I was down to 155. So I lost like 85 pounds like in 5 months. And I did not plan on losing that weight. But it was just like, and I started out, so no matter how tired I was at night, I was going to go to the gym. And I would go to like the trainer would put me on an elliptical machine, like a life whatever machine, whether it was bicycles, just 3 minutes, level one. And I was almost like dying after 3 minutes. I could hardly breathe, but I just kept at it. And then I was able to do more things. And I was eating pastrami, chopped liver, triple-decker sandwiches every day, and all kinds of other unhealthy kind of foods, frying stuff and sour cream on my potato pancakes and whatever I could do to add to the weight I was doing. And again, I just decided I'm going to cut this out. I'm going to stop this and stop that. And I lost the weight, and I started running marathons after that. But what happened when my daughter was like 2-3 years old, I noticed I was starting to gain weight. But I also, what I was doing is that I was being the garbage can, you know, in the house where my daughter, you know, what happens a lot with kids is like you're not finishing that last chicken nugget and you feel bad about throwing it out in the garbage, so you eat it. Or the last piece of pizza, you don't want, like, it's not going to be good leftover, so you eat that. So I became the garbage can. And I started thinking about when I lost all that weight, and I said I'm going to cut out being the garbage can. And sure enough, I lost weight very quickly. So I actually, I wrote a chapter in this book, but I actually intended to write a book on that, the pickled herring diet and other conversations on getting to normal. Like, people talk about habits, good habits, bad habits. I like to talk about normals. I love the word normal. This is what you normally do, and you create new normals, and you could even go to old normals. So instead of pastrami, chopped liver, triple-decker sandwich, I got myself a tuna fish sandwich, which is what I had as a kid. I would eat a lot of tuna fish. But just like I went back to some familiar old normals that might have been healthier, I develop new normals. And once it's your normal, it really feels bad when you don't do it anymore. So like back then, I would go to the gym no matter how tired I was. That became a normal. It's not a habit. No one's going to say it's your habit to go to the gym. You could say it. But if it's normal, it's who you are. It's really part of your breathing. I normally breathe. I normally open my eyes in the morning. It's what you do, and it becomes important to you. It's not something you slide back and forth. I had a good habit, and then I slide into that bad habit. It's your normal, and it is a greater sense of ownership when you happen to have a normal, as opposed to like New Year's resolutions as to what habits you want to do. So that's, I'm a big preacher of normals, like trying to figure that out. And once you figure out your normals, and it's your normal, you own it. And there's no going back. Anyway, that's my two cents on that topic.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. And so between you and your partner, did you ever go to therapist or counselors to overcome any of your pitted up emotions and how to deal with them? Or did you just learn together on your own?
We never went to any counselors on that. No, I never did. One of the things about being married to a therapist, I was married 20 years to my ex-wife, and then I've been together with another therapist, and we got married recently. So, yeah, it's about 20, almost 30 years, actually, now, with just therapists. And one thing therapists always want to do is like, oh, you should go to a therapist. So I used to go to therapists just because, and then my ex-wife, she gave me about like every self-help book, you know, to read. And the thing about my book, just well, I'm more of an attorney, and you know, it's almost like I'm making my closing argument when I'm writing, and I also want to be funny and entertaining. So like, if I'm giving a closing argument to a jury, I want to entertain. I want to get them really on my side, and I write with that same kind of approach. And all these self-help books that I had to suffer through, it's like the first chapters go, oh, that's really good, that's really interesting. And then it seems like it becomes the greatest hits collection of the therapist, and I'm reading the same chapter over and over and over again. So what I try to do in this book is use actually my own personal stories in some of the chapters. Some of them I just create stories. I have a blog where I actually write even more stories. But again, it's written in a way like I'm giving this entertaining closing argument to make give people like an anchor to hold on to. And also, it's from a negotiation standpoint. I'm an attorney. I negotiate for a living. And, one of the things I tell attorneys, we give them seminars where these people, they want to argue. And I always have to tell them, arguments take away your power. Because once you argue, you're never surprising the other side with your argument. It's not like I go into negotiation and I make this argument, they are so prepared for that argument. They know it's coming. It's just they see the mile away. They prepared for their arguments in response to your arguments, so you don't even get value in your argument. And basically how to speak in the factual sense. So that's a whole different area, talking about like looking at things from a macro versus a micro approach. And, you know, that's a discussion for a different day. So that's where I'm coming from. It's not from going to obviously being with a therapist does add to it. The Zen part of my life where it actually is about embracing. Everything about Zen is trying to embrace what you're trying to get rid of. So I went to the Village Zendo, which is it's like Buddhism, and it really is about just sitting there and just being in the moment, being present, and not just facing things and not running away from it, and just feeling, you know, that's where everything comes from. Hello? Hello?
Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Hello, Steve.
Hello?
Yes. Oh, sorry. We had a technical glitch here. I lost you. But we're back on the air
also,
now.
All of a sudden, I was talking in mid-sentence, muted, and then it went off.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened, but anyway, we're back on the air.
So
okay. I don't know what happened. So you're listening to Columbo Chronicles. We had a technical glitch, but we're back on the air. I have no clue what happened. So we were talking about your dealings with therapists and how you married therapists and how you actually decided to write more personal stories on a grown-up guide to effective crankiness, the Crankitosis Thesaurus Method by Stephen Joseph. So tell me, you ran the marathon in Boston. Can you tell us a little bit about that story? And did you feel crankiness after that experience? And if you did, how did you overcome it?
Well, I've run Boston 5 times, and actually, what's the story on that one, actually, was the last Boston Marathon I've done was the year there was a terrorist bombing. And I was quite lucky on that one, really just bizarrely lucky, because I was in the 10th corral of the first wave. So I just made the first wave, because they have 10 corrals. If I did not make that first wave, they would have put me in the first corral of the second wave, which started half an hour later. So if I was in that second wave, I would have crossed the finish line right exactly when the bombs went off. So I was not cranky. I guess more horrified or dumbfounded, and then I get calls from the local press in New York, I guess, to get lists, and I'm getting calls in my room. I didn't even know that the bombing occurred. So everybody wants, and then people called from my office to know if I was okay. So I had all of that. And my wife was calling up, get on the train, go home right away. You know, she was worried. So there was a lot of cranky people around me because of that. And I guess, it was a kind of a shaky experience. So that was my last Boston marathon experience. So right now I'm training to get back into Boston. So I need 3 hours and 50 minutes. I in the 60-year age group. Working on that, and feel pretty good that I hopefully could get in, and that would not make me cranky.
Well, no, but I read that, you know, in your book that it was a really, you were very, very lucky to have missed that horrifying experience, and God bless you for writing about that, because it's an important part of our history. So if you were to give our audience a message about your book and about yourself, and what would that message be?
The message would be that just really to breathe with it and have fun with it. It's who we are, that we are all cranky, not to feel bad about being cranky. If you look up online and you see like crankiness, you'll see like how to get rid of it. And it's not about getting rid of it. It really is to be effectively cranky. And effectively cranky means people hear you and you hear other people. And the result is that you end up feeling not so cranky after all, because you're empowered. You're empowered by it. So, I continue to write on topics of crankiness, having a lot of fun with it. So at StephenJosephAuthor.com, there's a blog. And the stuff just gets better and better and better. So invite everybody to go to the blog, and you'll be very well entertained by reading the stories in the blog.
That's fantastic. And so what about the purchase of your book? Where can they find your book?
Well, you could find it pretty much on any site. Amazon is always the go-to place, I would guess. And actually on Amazon, there's already like 267 reviews, 4.7 out of 5 stars. So I'm very excited about that. So Amazon probably is the easiest place, but if you went to Barnes & Noble's, Walmart.com, anywhere else, you'd be able to pick up the book.
That's fantastic, Stephen Joseph, and we really appreciate, sorry for the glitch, don't know what happened with the technical glitch, I'll have to find out later, I guess, but I hope everyone goes out and gets a copy of A Grown-Up Guide to Effective Crankiness, the Crankatosaurus Method, and Stephen Joseph, we wish you much success with your books, including this one, and much success in your career as a lawyer as well, continued success. God bless you, and thank you so much for being on Colombo Chronicle.
Thank you so You're much, welcome. Rose. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
And Stephen Joseph has left the building, and again, we all suffer from crankiness from time to time. It isn't something new, but now we can find out how to overcome it and live with it and make ourselves better, our family life better, our workplace better, and dealing with the public. A Grown-Up Guide to Effective Crankiness. Stephen is spelled S-T-E-V-E-N, Joseph, Stephen Joseph. And on that note, we're going to enter into the world of politics. So we will be back in just a moment, so don't touch that dial.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Hi, we're back on Columbo Chronicles Live, so listen up. We're entering into the world of politics. We just left the world of authors and experts. And now there's something that came out new that I think you probably won't hear on mainstream media or the two giant social media sites. It's from the University of California. It's Grow and Eat Your Own Vaccines. And it's by Jules Bernstein at the University of California in Riverside. It just came out on the 16th of September in 2021. It says that the future of vaccines may look like eating a salad than getting a shot in the arm. UC Riverside scientists are studying whether they can turn edible plants like lettuce into mRNA vaccine factories. Messenger RNA or mRNA technology, which they use in the COVID-19 shots for Pfizer and Moderna, works by teaching our cells to recognize and protect us against infectious diseases. Well, this is a little bit disturbing that we would be eating vaccinations in our salad. One of the challenges with this new technology is that it must be kept cold to maintain stability during transport and storage. If this new project is successful, plant-based mRNA vaccines, which can be eaten, could overcome this challenge with the ability to be stored at room temperature. The project's goals, made possible by a $500,000 grant from the National Science Foundation, are threefold, showing that DNA containing the mRNA vaccines can be successfully delivered into the part of plant cells where it will replicate, demonstrating the plants can produce enough mRNA to rival a traditional shot, and finally determine the right dosage. Ideally, a single plant would produce enough mRNA to vaccinate a single person, said Juan Pablo Geraldo, an associate professor in UC Riverside's Department of Botany and Plant Sciences, who is leading the research done in collaboration with scientists from UC San Diego and Carnegie Mellon University. We are testing this approach with spinach and lettuce and have long-term goals of people growing it in their own gardens, Geraldo said. How dangerous is this? People growing their own vaccinations. Farmers could also eventually grow entire fields of it. Key to making this work are chloroplasts, small organs in plant cells that convert sunlight into energy the plant can use. They're tiny solar-powered factories that produce sugar and other molecules, which allow the plant to grow, Geraldo said. While we are truly becoming a self-help human being society, or will we become the transhuman society of the future, which is another agenda they're working on. They're also an untapped source for making desirable molecules. In the past, Geraldo has shown that it is possible for chloroplasts to express genes that aren't naturally part of the plant. He and his colleagues did this by sending foreign genetic material into plant cells inside a protective casing, determining the optimal properties of these casings for delivery into plant cells is a specialty of Geraldo's laboratory. For this project, Geraldo teamed up with Nicole Steinmetz, a UC San Diego professor of nanoengineering, to utilize nanotechnologies engineered by her team that will deliver genetic material to the chloroplast. Our idea is to propose naturally occurring nanoparticles, namely plant viruses, for gene delivery to plants, Steinmetz said. Some engineering goes into this to make the nanoparticles go to the chloroplast and also to render them non-infectious towards the plant. For Geraldo, the chance to develop this idea with mRNA is the culmination of a dream, one of the reasons he started working in nanotechnology was so he could apply it to plants. Well, that's really interesting because in the mRNA vaccines, they have found that most metals exhibit some form of toxicity when injected, but the potential for human increases exponentially when a human body containing magnetic or diamagnetic nanoparticles is placed in the powerful fields produced by magnetic resonance imaging equipment. And they have an urgent warning because just recently they recalled Moderna mRNA vaccines that where they found metal inside the vaccinations. We believe MRI scans are causing serious injuries, including paralysis in COVID-19 vaccinated patients. Patients are showing clear signs of having magnetized particles within them post-vaccination. The hypothesis is that magnetized lipid nanoparticles within the patient migrate under the huge magnetic fields used within the MRI, causing damage on a nanoscale equivalent to multiple shrapnel wounds. And that is from the University of California. But there's much more to that. And so these mad scientists are people to be followed and read up on what they are planning to do in the future. It also says that nitrogen is limited to the environment, but plants need it to grow. Most farmers apply nitrogen to the soil. As a result, roughly half of it ends up in groundwater, contaminating waterways, causing algae blooms, and interacting with other organisms. It also produces nitrous oxide, another pollutant. So you also have the possibility of poisoning people as well. And then, do you really need to wear a mask during the summer out in the deserts, wherever there is hot weather? You're not going to hear this information on mainstream media. Mask conditions allow yeast to thrive. There's a lot going on in your mouth. In fact, there are about 700 species of microbes living in there. According to the National Institute of Health, NIH, like other areas of your body, there are both good bacteria and bad, the kind that make your breath stink or lead to cavities. And there's also fungus, which is normal but can cause a whole host of problems. Also, the Dental Association and health articles from the Dental Association, different organizations, have stated that by wearing masks long-term, that they cut the saliva in your mouth, diminish the saliva. Saliva is needed to protect the teeth and the gums from bacteria. And when it's cut down, it can cause tooth decay, loss of teeth, and gum disease, which is irreparable, get into your lungs and cause bacterial pneumonia, and you could die. So they are not telling you about the direct adverse health effects of wearing masks long term. During the 1918 pandemic, the health department stated that the masks didn't cure the or end the pandemic, but what did end it was removing the mask and breathing in fresh oxygen, fresh air, opening the windows and doors and getting ventilation, and also providing clean water and nourishment, because 60% of the population was undernourished, weren't getting the vitamins, supplements, and minerals to keep their immune system and their bodies healthy, their cells, their organs, their brain, their heart, their lungs, etc., which we need in order to keep our cells and our organs and our brain and our immune system healthy. And that fights off the viruses, because we have 22 trillion viruses inside our bodies. And that's why God created the immune system, created the nose and mouth to inhale and exhale naturally, because when he created Adam and Eve, he breathed in the breath of life, which is oxygen, fresh air, into their bodies so that they could breathe and live. And when a doctor delivers a baby, he spanks the bottom so that they will take in that deep breath of fresh air and oxygen and exhale and cry so that they can live. We need oxygen and fresh air 24/7, inhaling, exhaling, to keep the cells, the organs, the brain, the health, the liver, the lungs healthy, and the immune system, so that we can live and continue to breathe in the breath of fresh air that God intended for us. So mask conditions allow yeast to thrive. Now that mask wearing is becoming the norm, you're more susceptible to mask-induced skin problems. Maskne is more common, but a candida infection is also possible. Both the skin and saliva can contain parasitic fungi of the genus Candida, a type of yeast that is normally present in the body, says Marina Pareto, Doc, MD, Dr. Pareto, a board-certified dermatologist at Skinfluence in New York City. The result can appear to be raw, red, irritated, or chapped area, or a skin rash. The appearance of Candida overgrowth, though, can be tough to distinguish from acne, says Dr. Joshua Zeltner, the director of cosmetic and clinical research in the Department of Dermatology at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City. That's because symptoms of this type of Candida infection may also look like red bumps or pus pimples, he adds. So it's very difficult for them to define exactly where these problems are coming from. One telltale sign is that the irritation is in the corners of your mouth. If you have an urge to compulsively lick your lips when they're dry, you may be at higher risk of this type of infection. If saliva gets trapped in the corners of your mouth, it becomes a breeding ground for Candida, explains Dr. Chen. This type of infection, which will appear as cracking, irritation, bleeding, and redness in the corners of the mouth, is commonly called angular cheilitis, says Dr. Chen. Mask wearing is one risk, but it also happens to people who wear dentures or young kids who use pacifiers. So those are very important issues for you to consider about putting masks long-term on babies, toddlers, children, teens, elderly who do have an issue with dribbling. And then you have the bacterial pneumonia. And also another doctor stated it can cause Legionnaires and all of these different diseases and bacteria and viruses that have to do with breathing, respiratory issues. Are very difficult to decipher or skin problems by even the most expert of doctors. And sometimes patients get lucky and have a doctor who recognizes this isn't COVID, this is Legionnaires, this isn't COVID, this is bacterial pneumonia, this is seasonal influenza, and more people die from influenza and heart attacks and strokes and so forth than they do from COVID. Then we have Operation Lockstep from the Rockefeller Playbook, which you should read phase one, phase two, and phase three. Phase one is common cold flu. And this is from the Rockefeller Playbook, Operation Lockstep, which is in place, along with United Nations Agenda 21. Symptoms at most media endorsement of mass paranoia and fear. Flawed testing system utilized, which picks up any genetic material in the body and triggers a positive result. Inflation of COVID case numbers through changing of death certificates. This is what they've been doing, too, since 2019. Double counting and classifying all deaths, including other diseases and natural causes, as COVID-19. And why are they doing this? Because they're accepting what I allege are bribes, but they refer to them as financial incentives to list everyone as a COVID patient, every test as a COVID test, and every patient who dies, even if they died of a car accident or a drug overdose or heart attack or stroke, as COVID-19 on the death certificate. They get tens of thousands of dollars for each patient and each death. They get more for the deaths than they do for the patient. Condition us to life under draconian laws, prevent protests, and identify public resistance. So they are also identifying those who resist the lockdowns, who resist the vaccinations, and who resist the testing. And number two, this is the Operation Lockstep Rockefeller Playbook Phase 2. Phase 2 will lead to compromised and frail immune systems through lack of contact with sunlight and healthy bacteria. This is part of the mask wearing that creates unhealthy bacteria in your mouth, can lead to other diseases like candida and also yeast problems and bacterial pneumonia. And it will be labeled as COVID deaths. Exposure to 5G radiation will further attack the immune system. And the FCC former chairman, he said he approved of installing 5Gs touching down in every city in America without any testing or long-term case studies on the direct effects of these EMPs, radiation, microwaves coming out of the 5G towers, which he said were safe, even though they would be at higher levels than they originally stated. Thus, when people reemerge into society, more people will fall ill. This will be blamed on COVID-19. This will occur before the vaccination is ready to justify it. A longer and more potent lockdown will follow. The Pfizer mRNA and the Moderna mRNA are the number two top pharmaceuticals making billions and billions of dollars. And Pfizer's already made in a few months $26 billion. Moderna made $14 billion. It is about the money and depopulation and control over the United States of America and eventually the world, and especially Europe, Canada, New Zealand, and Australia, Western civilization. And that is why they're flooding these Western civilization with third world foreigners, and because they will be uneducated and poor and more apt to control than those who are educated and who are healthy and know the truth. And so you will be classified as an anti-vaxxer, as a resistor, as a right-wing extremist, as a domestic terrorist under the Operation Lockstep from the Rockefeller Playbook if you don't cooperate with your demise, using your tax dollars for your own demise and that of the world population. because Agenda 21 calls for the depopulation of 50% of the population by 2030, but they upped it to 2025, and 90% by 2050. And Bill Gates is invested in Pfizer and Moderna, and he and George Soros bought BioNTech. Pfizer and BioNTech appear to be one entity because they are splitting the profits. Third phase, and Bill Gates stated that they will plunge a genetically engineered vaccine in every child in the world, and every person in the world must be vaccinated, even if millions die or billions, and that he intends to make $200 billion in profits. And Operation Lockstep from the Rockefeller Playbook Phase 3 is, and lastly, if majority of people resist the vaccine, a weaponized SARS, HIV, MERS, which is plagued for generations in China and the Middle East, which are the foreigners they are allowing to migrate since 2009 and fly them into our country without checking them for SARS and MERS and HIV. And the Obama and Biden and the Democrats, Hillary Clinton and John Kerry and all the rest of the Democrats, used our tax dollars to fly them in secretly at night and used the U.S. Refugee Agency to rush in as many as possible before the money ran out in 2018. So phase three, lastly, is if majority of people resist the vaccine, a weaponized SARS, HIV, MERS virus will be released. Well, remember what Dr. Fauci said, who was the catalyst to this coronavirus, and many wealthy people funded it, funded China and the Wuhan lab to continue on after a moratorium was placed, as this research being too dangerous and if unleashed could create a biochemical weapon that could kill millions of people. But he continued on with it. A lot of people will die from this. It will be survival of the fittest. It will also be the ultimate push for everyone to be vaccinated in order to return to normality. Those who have taken the vaccine will be at war with those who have not. It will be anarchy from all sides. And isn't that what is happening? Isn't that exactly what is happening today since 2019 and even going back further than that? So that's all we have time for today. I hope I provided you with information that you can think about, research, do your own homework, come to your own conclusions. Don't believe anything I've told you today. Please do your own homework, your own research. Remember, injustices can happen to you and they can happen to me, but together we can make a positive difference when we do our own homework, our own research, and come to our own conclusions, which takes just a little time every day to do this research. Look up Operation Lockstep from the Rockefeller Playbook. Look up United Nations Agenda 21, the redevelopment of the planet, sustainable planet, that requires a reduction of the population of the world in order to create and redevelop the entire world with the wealthy 10% that are allegedly to be the survivors by 2050 to continue on with their electric cars or artificial intelligence or 5G towers and so forth. And on that note, I have to say, God bless you. God bless America. God bless our military. God bless all Americans and people everywhere who are standing up for freedom, liberty, rights, freedom of choice to control their own bodies and minds, free will, and defending, upholding, and protecting, and preserving the sovereignty of this great nation and the United States Constitution.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or, if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.